This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Today is Sunday, August 2nd, 2020. On this day in 1980, neo-fascists bombed a train station in Bologna, Italy, killing 85 people and injuring more than 200. Welcome to Today in True Crime, a Parcast original. Due to the graphic nature of today's crimes, listener discretion is advised. Extreme caution is advised for listeners under 13. Today, we're covering one of the deadliest acts of terror in Italian history. It's come to be known as the Strage di Bologna, the Bologna Massacre. Let's travel back in time to the morning of August 2nd, 1980, sometime around 10:20 a.m. Tourists, locals, workers, and travelers all crammed into Bologna's central station, trying to escape the midsummer heat. They were appreciating the train station's air conditioning, but no one noticed an abandoned suitcase lying on the floor of the second-class waiting room. Not the news agents, porters, or security persons. In the waiting room, 3-year-old Angela Frezu sat with her mother, Maria, and two friends. They were about to board a train to Lake Garda in northern Italy. But when the two large clocks outside the station struck 10:25 a.m., an explosion erupted from the waiting room. Screams of terror filled the air. The west wing of the building emitted a strange flash of yellow light. 44-year-old Professor Malcolm Quantrill heard the shattering of glass and crumbling of brick as he watched a ticket window disintegrate in front of his eyes. Everyone around him started to run, many of them injured with broken limbs, blood pouring out of wounds. A 150-foot facade collapsed. The waiting area, a restaurant, and offices were destroyed by the blast. Within minutes, the search for survivors began. Police, ambulances, and citizens descended on the wreckage. 22-year-old British tourist Simon Gray watched EMTs run into the wreckage before placing a middle-aged man on a stretcher. The detonation amputated one of his legs. Within the hour, authorities cordoned off the scene, but dozens of friends, relatives, children, and spouses ignored the caution tape. They ran to sift through stone, dust, and trash, desperately trying to find their loved ones trapped underneath. Later, thousands of volunteers would arrive to help them. Unprepared, the university city didn't have enough ambulances. Some wounded had to be transported from the devastation by the taxis outside. But by the time the last ambulance left, at least 75 people were dead on the scene and more than 200 injured. For the first 3 hours, everyone in the station, including the officials and all survivors, thought the explosion was the result of a gas leak, an accident. But then, at 1:46 p.m., the Italian press agency, ANSA, received a phone call. The voice on the other end of the line sounded male and pre-recorded. "This is Armed Revolutionary Nuclei. We claim responsibility for the attack on Bologna train station. Honor to comrade Mario Tutti." But the Armed Revolutionary Nuclei wasn't the only group to claim responsibility for the terrorist attack. In the hours after the first call, other extremist organizations also took credit for the handiwork, leaving investigators overwhelmed with leads. Before everything was said and done, 10 more people died from injuries sustained by the explosion, bringing the death count to 85. To this day, it remains one of the deadliest attacks in Italian history. 3-year-old Angela Frezu was the youngest victim killed. Her mother died by her side. Coming up, the true culprit.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Now, back to the story. After August 2nd, 1980, photographs of the Bologna train station ran in newspapers around the globe. The pictures were shocking. Rescue workers cried next to mangled bodies of the dead, many of which were dressed in swimwear for the vacations they had planned to go on. On August 5th, 3 days after the explosion, Italy's citizens organized a strike to express their disapproval. For 2 predetermined hours, the country stood still. The protest was in response to much more than the August 2nd bombing at the Bologna Central Station. It was a reaction to years of instability. The 70s and 80s were known as the years of lead in Italy. They were filled with violence perpetrated by the mafia, neo-fascists, and other extremist organizations. For perspective, from the late 60s through the 80s, Italy experienced more than 12,000 different terror attacks. 362 people died. 2 years before the Bologna massacre, in 1978, the far-left group, the Red Brigades, kidnapped and assassinated the Prime Minister of Italy, Aldo Moro. In other words, people were conditioned to live in fear. But after 85 people died from just one attack alone, Italian citizens were desperate to find those responsible and hold them accountable. The investigation, however, was a complex web of disinformation. As we mentioned, a number of organizations claimed responsibility for the bombing. But those admissions of guilt might have been much more than red herrings. Unfortunately, we don't have time to dive into all the many trials, appeals, convictions, and acquittals associated with the Bologna massacre, but the first began 7 years after the bombing in March of 1987. Suspects ranged from the Soviet KGB to 2 German terrorists who just so happened to be in Bologna that day to various groups from France, Libya, Palestine, and Spain. But the persons most held responsible belonged to the far-right Italian neo-fascist group, the Armed Revolutionary Nuclei, the organization that first called to claim responsibility. 2 of its members, Francesca Mambro and Valerio Fioravanti, received multiple life sentences for their involvement. It's interesting to note, however, that they confessed to a number of other murders and terror attacks over the course of their trials. But to this day, they maintain they had nothing to do with the bombing in Bologna. They even had alibis. In fact, every former member of the organization insists that the Armed Revolutionary Nuclei had no involvement. One of the most convincing theories out there is also the most scandalous. Some have suggested that the Italian Secret Service worked in conjunction with Propaganda Due, or P2, a chapter of the Freemasons, a secret society that dates back to the 1300s. Historically, members of the Masonic Lodge have included a number of influential Italian leaders. When experts examined the explosives used in the massacre, they determined them to be military grade. After the attack in Bologna on January 13, 1981, a member of the Carabinieri, an official Italian police force, planted a suitcase full of explosives and fake documents. Its purpose was to mislead investigators. Their suggested motivation for the bombing? Allegedly, they wanted to justify the need for a strong authoritarian government and draw people away from the popular Communist Party. To do so, they encouraged and enacted all forms of violence. It didn't matter if the left or the right were blamed, so long as the solution was government intervention. It's been called the strategy of tension. If true, the proposed mastermind of the attack is fascist Licio Gelli, who had been the head of the P2 Grand Lodge at the time. An ardent supporter of Mussolini, he once acted as liaison between Italy's government and Nazi Germany. In 1996, he was nominated for a Nobel Prize in Literature. In 2015, he died at the age of 96. As of this recording, a group composed of family members of the deceased, the Association of the Relatives of the Victims, still seek justice for those killed in the Bologna Massacre, one of the deadliest acts of terrorism to take place in Italy to this day. Thanks for listening to Today in True Crime. I'm Vanessa Richardson. If you enjoyed this episode, check out the Parcast original Hostage for other tales of resilience in the face of terrorism. Today in True Crime is a Parcast original. You can find more episodes of Today in True Crime and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Today in True Crime, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Today in True Crime on Spotify, just open the app and type Today in True Crime in the search bar. Today in True Crime was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound designed by Juan Borda, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Joshua Kern. This episode of Today in True Crime was written by Connor Sampson, with writing assistance by Maggie Admire. I'm Vanessa Richardson.